This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, while many of us recognize the eternal value of religion, a new study out of Georgetown University reveals that religion has a significant economic value in America right here, right now. One of the authors of the study, Brian Grimm, joins us with the details in just a moment. And new developments in Congress's pursuit of the facts surrounding Planned Parenthood's alleged trafficking in aborted baby body parts. Chairman of the House Select Investigative Panel on Infant Lives, Congresswoman Marsha Blackburn, joins me later here on Washington Watch. Also, Monday night, Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump will meet in the first presidential debate of 2016 in New York. How important is this debate? Scott Rasmussen has the answer to that question. The website, TonyPerkins.com, you can find out more there at the website about today's program. Lots of resources there for you as well. Let me remind you, coming up, the Pulpit Freedom Sunday, October the 2nd, have some resources there for you on that. Also, let me encourage you, it's not up there, but folks, it's almost time to vote, so make sure you're registered and voting. We have resources available for you through our Culture Impact Team, information at the Family Research Council. If you want to know how you can be a part of helping your church be equipped, engaged, and involved, well, just email me, tony@tonyperkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at T Perkins. Okay, Jesus in Matthew tells us to store up treasure in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, I would add floods, but also where thieves do not break in and steal. Well, a new study shows that eternal treasure provides good dividends here and now, not only for the individual, but for the economy as well. Joining me to discuss it is Dr. Brian Grimm. Dr. Grimm is president of the Religious Freedom and Business Foundation at the Berkeley Center at Georgetown University. Dr. Grimm, welcome to Washington Watch.
Good to be with you, Tony.
A fascinating study that you and I believe is your daughter worked with you on. Entitled The Socioeconomic Contribution of Religion to American Society, an Empirical Analysis. Tell our listeners about the focus of this study and what you discovered.
Well, the study looked at the ways different religion sectors within the United States contribute to the social and economic well-being of our country, looking at three sectors. First, congregations. The work that congregations do adds $418 billion every year to our economy. Institutions like charities, religious, faith-based universities, and healthcare systems add another $303 billion. And then religion-related or religious businesses add another $438 billion. That all adds up to $1.2 trillion. And that's with a T, and in these days when you have a T, that's talking real money.
Yeah, it's talking a lot of real money. When you look at that, the total revenue, the $1.2 trillion that is generated each year through these religious sectors, that is more than the U.S. economy. It means more to the U.S. economy than the top 10 technology companies like Google and Apple and Amazon all combined. So we're not talking about peanuts here. We're talking about something that's very significant.
Yeah, well, that figure would make the religious sector of the American economy, if a national economy, would be the 15th largest national economy in the world, outpacing more than 180 countries in the world. It also is 50% larger than the top biggest six U.S. oil companies, so you could say that's a lot of spiritual fuel being pumped into our society and economy.
Well, it is, not only in the intangibles that we know that religion and service that is prompted by religion generates, as we're actually seeing back in my home state of Louisiana in the aftermath of this historic flooding, but when you look at the actual dollars, as you have tracked here, and that's what this is about. This is about the dollars and not so much the intangibles. But when you look at the, for instance, the faith-based charities, that is, you said about 40% of the top 50 U.S. charities. So this is a big, big part of charitable giving in the United States.
Yeah, and that, I mean, in terms of national charities, that's a huge sector. But I think the real revealing part of the study is it's really the first time we've put a dollar amount on what we do in our local congregations, whether it's, you know, churches or mosques or synagogues across the country. Of course, the large majority are churches across the U.S. And that is those are very tangible actions. So they take in $84 billion a year, but all of that is spent locally. So what does that money go for? First, it goes to pay salaries of the people working in local congregations. And all of that money, of course, gets taxed on employment tax, Social Security tax, unemployment tax. And then that money gets spent on projects. And one of the, there's a lot of data if you look at the whole study, but one point is that congregations, 320,000 congregations across the U.S., recruit volunteers for projects outside their walls, such as for the Red Cross, United Way, Big Brothers, Big Sisters. So all of this spending goes not just to benefit the local congregation per se, but the community. So you can look at congregations as local hubs for social and economic activity. And then on top of that are the healthcare institutions and hospitals, the charities and higher education. So the study shows that there's so many diverse ways that faith groups are contributing to our society and economy, not just through one channel, not just through the great work that that national charities do, but also at the local level through congregations.
Well, Dr. Grimm, you also look at the congregations, and I think you addressed 340,000 of those, but you also look at the businesses that are owned by people who operate based on a religious paradigm, and so they operate according to their faith. And so my question, a couple of questions. First, I want to ask you about the impact that the loss of religion in our public sphere, if we were to just take religion out of the public space where those that are motivated by their religion would not be able to fully engage, would that have an economic impact on the United States?
Well, I think the data are very clear that it would. There was a recent survey by the Pew Research Center where I worked for about 8 years, and they asked people, did you volunteer in the past week, and did you donate money, time, or goods to the poor in the past week? And on both questions, highly religious people were significantly more likely to have volunteered or given or helped the poor in the past week. So, of course, the people who are highly religious don't hold a monopoly on doing good works, but the data show that they are much more likely to do it. And therefore, if you would pull out the faith sector in U.S. society, we would see a marked decrease. Many programs would be lost. For instance, there's 130,000 drug and alcohol abuse recovery programs in local congregations. If we pull out faith, all those would be gone, and who would step in? 121,000 congregations have projects to help the unemployed. If you pull faith out, who's going to step in and do that? And even something that's maybe a counterintuitive finding, there's 26,000 congregations across the country that provide support for persons with HIV/AIDS. So that would make one congregation-based ministry to people with HIV/AIDS for every 46 people infected with the virus. So, just the amount of good works is staggering when you start to quantify it. And one reason it's never been quantified is because we're looking across all faiths, all denominations, Catholics, Protestants, Pentecostals, historically black churches, and then synagogues and mosques. And so pulling all this together is the first time anyone's really looked at a full snapshot of what's going on in our country.
So if you look at that, Dr. Grimm, the impact, and is there a multiplier effect for every dollar that is given? Were you able to determine what that multiplier is for that dollar that is given through faith-based organizations?
Yeah, so today at Georgetown University, we had a panel, and we had John DeLulio from University of Pennsylvania, and then Byron Johnson from Baylor University. And John quoted a figure. He thinks it's, you know, for every dollar you get eight in benefits given. I don't know if that figure is right or not, but he was looking and thinking, you know, there's a true multiplier effect. And then Byron Johnson was sort of looking at the data, and he said that the estimate of 344,000 congregations across the country is probably 40% low, because that survey of congregations missed many. So I think what we have here is a starting point. It's a starting point for a national discussion, not about the problems of faith, but what the solutions faith brings to the many challenges facing people and communities today.
Well, John knows a little bit about this. John was a part of the first Office of Faith-Based Initiatives there in the White House back when George Bush was president. The issue here, though, I think, John, Dr. Grimm, from a standpoint of policymakers, is that the data here is pretty overwhelming when you look at the positive impact of religion. As you said, put aside the intangibles and the problems that might be associated that some see with religion, but the economic, for those that just want to look at this from a libertarian standpoint, our policy should encourage people to be engaged in religious societies and organizations because there is an economic benefit for all of society. And that, again, that takes away the intangibles, which personally I think are more important. But again, just for the libertarians, this is pretty convincing.
Yeah, I think the data are pretty clear. There's clear benefits. Like you say, there are everything has a plus and a minus. So, you know, with this religion-related terrorism, the various sex abuse scandals that have happened in congregations, you know, these things are negatives. But that's usually what gets people's attention, and that's what usually makes news. And the positive side goes unreported, and then what happens in our national discussion is that there becomes a narrative that, oh, another thing perpetrated by religion or religious people did this or that, and then they transfer that sort of the few bad apples, as they say, spoil the whole bunch, and that's what happens in public opinion sometimes. So I think that, you know, one of the hopes that at least I have for this research is that it brings some balance to the discussion, because this is a critical part of our society and economy. And with the, as you mentioned, the downtick in religious affiliation, this sort of income, social goods generating hub of activity, it could be threatened not only from policy, but also from people being less active in their faith.
Yeah. Well, a fascinating study. Dr. Grimm, thanks so much for joining us today. It's just very, very good work. Appreciate you joining us this afternoon and sharing your thoughts with us.
Thanks for having me, Tony.
All right. Dr. Brian Grimm, the socioeconomic contribution of religion to American society. Well, folks, I mean, we know, as I said, the intangibles, but here, this should be something that every policymaker looks at. And if for no other reason, and I'm just, look, there are many other reasons, but for no other reason, Obama, Clinton, and all those who are hostile to religious freedom, they should be promoting it. But they're so driven by animus toward religious freedom that they can't see these tangible benefits. All right, folks, don't go away. We're coming right back after this break with Marsha Blackburn.
On the first day of our tour of Israel, we will stand on the Mount of Olives and look out over the old city of Jerusalem. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. March 9 through 17, we'll be going to Israel, the Holy Land. This is 2017, of course. We'll be flying from New York City, JFK Airport, direct to Tel Aviv, and then we'll begin our 9-day tour of Israel, including Jerusalem, Bethlehem, Jericho, Tiberias, Nazareth, the Sea of Galilee, the Jordan River, and all the places you've read about since you were a child in the Bible. For more information on this tour, you can order a brochure by calling us at 800-FAMILIES, 800-FAMILIES, option 5. Also, you can visit the website twholyland.com.
Dan Celia of Financial Issues.
Would you make one of the most important phone calls that you can make as far as your economic, your financial stewardship? I believe that permanent income is incredibly important to us, especially when you're retired. Listen, one thing we know for certain, the consumption of goods and your cost are never going to change. Make sure that you protect your income. Social Security, you will likely have, maybe a pension. Add to permanent income with a charitable gift annuity and do the Lord's work. There's no better organization to do it with than the AFA Foundation, and no better time in our economy than right now.
Call and speak with a representative of the AFA Foundation at 800-326-4543, extension 345.
With a ministry opportunity, here's Steve Tiber of 8 Days of Hope.
Last year in October, 25 inches of rain fell in the state of South Carolina. 16,000 homes had flood damage, and now you and I get a chance to bless them as they wait for somebody to come and help rebuild their homes. 8 Days of Hope 12, Black River, South Carolina. We expect thousands of volunteers from around the country to come to that beautiful state. You can come for 3 days, you can come for all 8 days. We love families. We need roofers and electricians and plumbers and carpenters, and we need people like me that are less skilled but just are excited to serve somebody in need. 8 Days of Hope 12, Black River, South Carolina. Hope to see you there.
The trip is October 8th through 15th. Volunteer for a minimum of 3 days at 8daysofhope.com. And if you'd like to help but are not able to go, financial donations are also needed. Sign up or give at 8daysofhope.com.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Thursday afternoon. The website is TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at T Perkins. All right, you probably remember, we've talked about it a number of times, the ghoulish videos that were released by David DeLeiden at the Center for Medical Progress last summer. Now, abortionists were seen on a hidden camera haggling over the prices for aborted baby organs while eating salads and sipping wine. And they shocked and appalled even the most ardent pro-abortion supporters. But what did happen? What happened is the video pulled back the curtain on the even darker side of the abortion industry, the trafficking of aborted baby body parts. Now, the public was outraged at what they saw. And so Congress acted and created the House Select Investigative Panel on Infant Lives. Now, many more shocking revelations were uncovered through the hearings that have been convened by this panel. And what we're finding, surprise, surprise, is that those in the abortion industry and those associated with this are refusing to come forward with the information that Congress is requesting. Joining me now to talk more about the latest developments is the chairwoman of the select panel, Congresswoman Marsha Blackburn. Marsha, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, and thank you so much for continuing to follow this issue and the work of the panel and what we are uncovering and also what we're up against. We appreciate it.
Well, let's talk about what you're up against, because yesterday, you and you're in the committee attempting to get information in issuing subpoenas, you actually have a little bit of opposition on your own panel from the Democratic Party.
Yes, we certainly did. And one of the procurement businesses, this is a business that engages in the selling of the body parts and fetal tissues. And they contract with these abortion clinics. So we have been trying to secure financial documents since last December from the procurement business. And Tony, we've been told by witnesses from both sides of the aisle that in order to make certain that no one is in violation of Title 42 U.S.C. 289 G2, that financial documents would be necessary. So Stem Express, one of the companies that sells the parts, we had requested documents last December. We sent a subpoena in February, a second subpoena in March, and they have refused to comply. So yesterday in the committee, I moved forward a contempt of Congress resolution pertaining to Stem Express and their CEO, Kate Dyer.
So what does that mean specifically?
What that means is we voted. The Democrats left the hearing room. They got up and walked out. So I called a quorum call, and then I called the roll, and I passed the contempt resolution. And now you will have the Energy and Commerce Committee chair and the speaker decide how it moves forward and whether it goes to the committee or goes to the floor. But, yes, we did our work, and we passed the resolution forward to hold them in contempt of Congress for noncompliance of the financial documents that we have been requesting for 9 months. And one of the things I think is so important to realize on this is that a subpoena is not something that is a suggestion or could you consider doing this. A subpoena is a requirement, and they have refused to meet the obligation to the subpoena that we put forward. So we were certainly within our right to issue a contempt charge on them.
This is amazing to me, Marcia, when we look over the past 8 years of how many of these investigations that Congress has been engaged in, whether it's the IRS, whether it's the gun running, Fast and Furious, where the left, those associated with the left or those involved in the Obama administration have simply refused to comply with Congress's request for information so that they can do the job that the American people elected them to do.
Well, right. That's exactly right. If they do, they try to, you know, they will say, okay, we've given you 1,700 pages of documents. Well, you can give me 20,000 pages of documents, but if they're not the documents we need, the volume does not matter. Or if they're documents where you have redacted everything on the page except the number and the heading, that doesn't give us the information that we need. What we need to know is what is the tracking on these financial transactions. So if there is nothing to hide, they should be willing to sit down with our accountants for the committee and our counsel and walk through the process of where they cover their costs, because it is illegal. You cannot sell a human being or the body parts of a human being in the United States of America. You cannot reap a profit. If you want to donate it, fine. You are within the law. But if you make even a penny, it is a felony offense.
It would suggest to me, based upon how they have continuously refused to provide this information, and, I mean, even the subpoenas, refused to comply with the subpoenas, that they're hiding something, in my view.
Well, it would. It would give you that impression because, you know, if they are working within the law, and they are aware that there is a market or a trafficking of fetal tissues and fetal body parts that has developed in this country, they should come to us and say, let us show you how we are in compliance with the law. As it is written, they should be welcoming and asking if
right.
they can come and prove their innocence.
Because it'll clear them, and they will be free to continue
That's
to
right.
do business if they're doing it legally and ethically. Congresswoman Marcia Blackburn, thanks so much for joining us. And once again, thank you for your work on this important issue.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Bye-bye.
All right. Congresswoman Marcia Blackburn, she is the chairperson of the House Select Investigative Panel on Infant Lives, looking into the trafficking of baby body parts by Planned Parenthood and various other organizations. Surprise, surprise, they're not providing the information being requested. You know, it's amazing the lawlessness that has been produced in the last 8 years. All right, we're going to be talking presidential politics when we return. Don't go away.
Making the most of your money, here's Dan Celia.
One of the headlines that we're looking at today is dollar adds to losses. Obviously, the dollar is devaluing, going down in value a bit as a result of the Fed not raising interest rates. Now, there's also a headline that says Fed's credibility questioned. That's an understatement. And if it's now just being questioned, I have a problem with why it's taken this long to question the credibility of any central bank, let alone the Fed. But needless to say, it wasn't a surprise that the Fed didn't raise interest rates. And I think the whole debate of interest rates, as I stated many, many times in the last several months, that the Fed was going to raise rates in September was ludicrous. I said on Fox Business last week that there was absolutely no chance that the Federal Reserve was going to raise interest rates in September before the election, when the guy she would be helping out already indicated that she would be fired. Now, she did come out with a statement this morning saying that her decision had nothing to do with politics. Well, of course, that's what she is going to say. But the fact of the matter is, human nature, if nothing else, had to kick in at some point in time. But the interesting part, of course, goes back to economic data. And the only way the Fed can rationalize not raising interest rates is to admit that the economic data is not as good as some might say it is. Now, I don't know how it's possible that the economic data cannot be very good when we have a 4.9% unemployment rate. Again, going back to the false positives and the smoke and mirrors in this economy, and the Fed, by not raising rates, is admitting that that's exactly what we have going on in the markets.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. All right, the website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at TPerkins. Let me invite you to be a part of the growing family of FRC supporters, which brings you Washington Watch every day. This comes to you strictly by the support of folks like you. No government money, nothing. Just supporters like you. So if you want to be a part of the FRC family, go to TonyPerkins.com and follow links over. All right. What a presidential race we've been watching over the last year. Over 20 candidates at the start, combining from both parties. That included 17 Republicans. With the primary season over and the two major parties having chosen their candidates, those two candidates will face off Monday night for the first time at a debate in New York, Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. How important is this debate when you look at this election and how close the polls are today? Joining me now to talk about this is Scott Rasmussen, who is the founder and president of STIRC. Scott, welcome back to Washington Watch.
It's great to be with you tonight, and it's especially a fascinating time in this race with the polls close and that debate coming up.
Well, you mentioned the polls. I mean, they're basically, depending on which poll you look at, one will be ahead in one will be ahead in the other. They're essentially tied, are they not?
Yeah, I think it's fair to say the race is tied. I've been doing a battleground state analysis on Fox, looking at different states each week. And what you find there is, because the race is getting close, the Electoral College is getting close, Donald Trump has a real shot to pick up states like Ohio and Florida that eluded Mitt Romney. But all of this is where things stand today. And, of course, what really matters is where they stand on November 8th.
Well, are there any trends? Do you see any trends developing? Scott, did I lose you? Oh, maybe he's on that New Jersey Turnpike. That's where we've lost him before. All right, we'll get him back. Scott, first off, he knows our community, and he knows what voters are looking for, and he's a good pollster. And so he's really got his finger on the pulse. And so I want to talk to him. As soon as we get him back on, we'll continue that conversation. And then a little bit later, we're going to have a conversation with you. You know, that debate is coming up Monday night. It is the first presidential debate. Okay, we got him back on. I'll save those thoughts for later. Scott, welcome back. You on that New Jersey Turnpike again?
Yeah, I'm going to have to find a different way to connect with you along the way. But
I have to get you a sat phone so you can stay in touch with us.
Okay.
Let's talk about the trends. Are there any trends developing?
Well, the trends recently have all been in Donald Trump's direction, and most of them have to do with turnout. What we're seeing is something that people talked about but didn't know how accurate it would be. Hillary Clinton is failing to generate enthusiasm among younger voters and minorities. So turnout among the Obama coalition appears to be down right now. Donald Trump is generating enthusiasm among white working class voters, and that is helping him, especially in states like Ohio. You know, when you look at all of this, the thing that I keep telling people, this year is a little bit different. We go through the motions of talking about these polls and analysis and electoral college like it's a normal year. But we have two candidates who are viewed unfavorably by a majority of the American people. And what nobody really likes to talk about is, because each team has about 40 or 42% of the electorate backing them right now, the remaining people, those who will make the decision, that 15 or 18%, they are generally people who do not like either candidate. So people who loathe the two choices are going to decide the next president.
The numbers I've seen, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I've looked at some polling of unaffiliated voters who would fall into that category, are breaking for Donald Trump in the last numbers I saw. Is that correct?
That's correct. And that's not something that should be all that surprising. The question is going to be the margin. But the next thing, when you look at all that polling data, and again, I go back to this idea that the people who could change their mind, who aren't committed, who are maybe saying they're voting for Gary Johnson right now or Jill Stein, what's interesting about them is they don't have an attachment to the candidates. They don't have a strong feeling. You know, 4 years ago, if you talked to a Barack Obama supporter, nothing you could do would change their mind. But because of this weak attachment, because of this large group who don't like either candidate, events like the debate next week, events like what's happening in Charlotte today, events like the terror attacks last week, and the way that the candidates respond to them could lead to a very big difference. I'm right now the race is close, but it would not surprise me if either candidate coming out of the debate and events after that opened up a fairly significant lead.
All right, we're up against a break. Scott, can you hold on for 3 minutes? So I want to ask
sure.
one more question on
Absolutely.
The other side. I want to ask you about this debate, and you said it could be significant. What has to happen for one of these candidates to emerge with a strong lead after this debate? So we're going to talk about that with Scott Rasmussen when we come back. So folks, stick around. Don't go away. There's more Washington Watch to come on the other side of the break, including your phone calls. We're going to go to the phone lines after we wrap up with Scott. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins.
As an attorney in communist Romania, Virginia Prodan searched for the truth. When she finally found it in the most forbidden book, the Bible, she made it her mission to defend fellow followers of Jesus Christ against unjust persecution. For this, Virginia was kidnapped, beaten, tortured, and placed under house arrest, even coming within seconds of being executed by order of Nicolae Ceaușescu, the Romanian dictator. Virginia Prodan's extraordinary courage, her search for truth, and her defiance in the face of evil is the subject of a riveting talk that she delivered at FRC's headquarters in Washington, D.C., marking the release of her memoir, Saving My Assassin. visit frc.org/Romania to listen to her account, as well as the disturbing parallels she sees between attacks on religious liberty in Romania during the 1980s and what is happening in America today. That's frc.org/Romania.
Christians have an exciting opportunity to help our country this election cycle. In 2012, 20 to 30 million Christians did not vote, and leaders were chosen without our input. That many votes can turn an election. We have an opportunity this year to put our nation back on course. Voter registration is open till October 8th in most states. Make sure you're registered to vote. And then on Election Day, make sure to vote. Be an informed voter. Visit AFAaction.net to get the AFA Action Voter Guide.
Consider serving the Lord with friendships. It's an opportunity to reach out to the needy around the world. They're now taking applications to volunteer, and they need help in the areas of mechanics, maritime, including deck, engine, and steward departments, food service, warehousing, and office. Check it out at friendships.org or call 337-433-5022.
On October 6th and 7th, College of the Ozarks in beautiful Branson, Missouri will host the Pensmore National Symposium on Religious Liberty. Confirmed speakers include Dr. Ben Carson, Liberty Institute President Kelly Shackelford, and from the American Family Association, Abraham Hamilton III.
The founders enshrined religious liberty as the first among the freedoms protected in the Bill of Rights because they recognized that the prosperity of the American Republic rose or fell with its religious freedom.
As our nation spirals into a deeper moral pit, this event may reconnect attendees with the intents of the Founding Fathers. It's high time Christians did something to preserve our liberties before they're lost forever. The Pensmore National Symposium on Religious Liberty is designed to inspire participants with a greater resolve through better understanding of the issue. The cost is $50 per person, and student admission is free. More information is available at AFR.net.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at T Perkins. Got that? All right. Okay. Scott Rasmussen and my guest. We're talking about Monday night's presidential debate, first one where Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton will square off in the 2016 presidential cycle. All right, Scott, what has to happen for one of the two to come out with a significant bump in Monday night's debate?
Well, you know, it's funny to even be raising this question because for the last two decades when people have asked about debates, I have been downplaying their significance, pointing out that there's hardly ever a lasting change coming out of the debates. But this year, because of Donald Trump's unconventional approach to things, I would expect the debates will have a huge audience, a significant number of people who aren't committed, and you know, to either candidate. And you can identify things. You know, Donald Trump should make sure that he looks the part of a president, but gets his points across without being too aggressive, or Hillary Clinton needs to make it look like she's strong both physically and politically, and that she has that she can somehow show competence without highlighting the fact that she's part of the status quo. But when you go through that analysis, I think you miss what happens in a debate. We have two candidates with a proven ability to say the wrong thing at the wrong time. The tone and attitudes that come through may matter more than specific things. You remember famously when Al Gore was shown sighing at some of George W. Bush's comments, and it really left a bad impression in a lot of people's mouths. So I don't know what the moment will be, but I would suspect there will be a couple of highlights that become the defining moment of this debate. And they could swing it significantly one way or the other. You know, you talk about these are volatile issues. What's happened? I lived in Charlotte for many years. It's breaking my heart what's going on in the city there right now. And there are no easy answers, but the way you address that question can have a significant impact on the way people perceive your worldview.
So it's safe to say that the stakes are very high Monday night for both candidates.
I don't think they have been higher for any debate in any time that I can remember. And, you know, when you're a campaign manager or you're part of that debate prep team, you're always nervous about what the candidates will say when they get out there on the stage. But most of the time, you've prepped them enough and the roles, you know, Barack Obama and Mitt Romney, it was a conventional enough setting, you felt pretty comfortable that things wouldn't get too out of hand. I think both campaigns are going to be extremely nervous when their candidates are on their stage. And I think it is quite possible that either candidate could get under the skin of the other and cause them to make some sort of a mistake.
We can have a cage match Monday night. It's going to be interesting.
Well, it's a shame we're talking about a presidential race that way, but that's absolutely true.
All right, Scott, thanks so much for joining us. As always, love talking to you.
Thank you. Look forward to doing it again.
All right, Scott Rasmussen. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, 866-372-7234. This is what I want to ask today. Okay, hold on. Listen to the question. I want those of you who have just decided in the last couple of weeks who you're going to vote for in this presidential race, okay? It could be, you know, I don't care who it is. I just want to know if you've just decided, okay, that you're going to vote in the presidential race, who have you decided to vote for and why? I'd like to know the answer to that question. All right, 866-372-7234. If you have, and I know a lot of our folks, I imagine that the vast majority of our listeners, you know, have been, you know, have known for some time that they're going to vote maybe, but some of you may have been hesitant because of just you weren't comfortable with any of the candidates. And so you were holding back, but you've now decided because of something that you're going to vote. I want to know what that something is. 866-372-7234. Let's go to Tennessee where Shirley is on the line. Shirley, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, thank you. I enjoyed listening to your show. God bless you all. And I just wanted to say, right now, and I could bounce, I'm not going for Hillary at all, but it looks like we only have two candidates. So if Trump were the only one that could be voted for, I would probably would have to vote for him. But my fear is that in this first debate, they're going to ask Trump a bunch of questions that he doesn't know. Because whereas Hillary has been Secretary of State and she at least has experience dealing with, you know, other nations and stuff, Trump may not know some of the things that's going to make him look bad. So we don't really know which way it's going to go. But, I mean, if they're the only two choices. But and so half of my heart says, you know, I could push the button for Trump, but the other half of me is still holding out, saying how angry I was at the fact that he did so much on Ted Cruz. So I don't know. I'm in the air.
Are you going to be watching Monday night?
Yeah, definitely. I'm looking forward to it. But I'm hoping that they don't do unfair stuff because there's no way Hillary will get my vote.
All right, Shirley. Thanks so much for listening and for calling in. I think they're going to set record numbers for people watching the debate on Monday night because anytime that there are unknowns, and clearly, anytime that you're dealing with, Donald Trump, you just don't know. I mean, you do know that he's going to do something that you just don't know what he's going to do. You know? You got that? I mean, it's kind of funny in a way. I mean, it's not funny. The interesting thing about this is that more people are engaged in watching these debates, and we saw this in the primary, because he is not as programmed as most political folks are. And I understand that. I've been in the political realm, and there's certain things you don't say or you say it a certain way because the media just jumps all over you. Well, you know what? He just didn't care about that. And he just said it like he thought it. He's still doing that to a large degree. So the challenge I think that he has is in those working, and I know the people working in his campaign, the challenge he has is to still be himself, which made him successful in the primary, but yet make that transition to where people see him as presidential. That's a hard balance. Hillary has to, I mean, she's very knowledgeable. There's no question about that. But she is, she's not believable. And she's, she's not really warm and friendly. Of course, Donald's not that much either in his public persona. I have to say, when you see him and engage him in events not on camera, he's much different. Now, I don't know. Hillary could be the same way. I don't know. I've not had those encounters. All right, let's go to Oklahoma, where Meredith is on the line. Meredith, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you very much. Thank you for taking my call.
So have you made a decision who you're going to vote for?
I sure have. I'm voting for Trump.
Why? What made you make that decision?
Everything I've ever seen about Hillary Clinton says that she is more crooked than the day is long. She has shown absolutely no sense when it comes to foreign policy or anything else, and I think we'll just be digging the hole deeper than it already is if she gets elected.
Okay, fair enough. Meredith, thanks for the call. You know, that's, you know, she's voting against Hillary Clinton, and I think that's probably going to be a very common trend or common explanation, is that people are concerned about Hillary. It's not so much that they've got the warm and fuzzies for Donald. All right, let's go to Arkansas, where CeCe is on the line. CeCe, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you, and I appreciate your guy letting me through because I told him I had made up my mind quite a while ago. But my point is, I don't know why Donald Trump is wasting his time debating with Hillary Clinton because she's such a liar. You can't believe anything she says, so what's the point? It's like debating with an alcoholic. You just, you know, you can't win with somebody who won't tell the truth. And so I don't think we should put that much importance on the debate or anything that any intercourse they have between each other because it just, you know, there's just no point in it whenever somebody can't tell the truth. So,
CeCe,
but I am voting for Donald Trump.
Well, thanks for the call, CeCe. And to that point, that is one of the things that when I say frustrates me. And I see this all the time, and I've gotten to the point where I just don't watch, I don't even watch television in terms of I don't watch television, period, but I usually watch C-SPAN or the news, and I have to monitor C-SPAN so I can watch the floor debate and see what's happening in Congress. But, I know a lot of these things. I mean, I'm actually in the rooms when these things are talked about. And so I know the ins and out of and I see people, members of Congress, who lie. And it is so frustrating because the American public just basically doesn't know any better. They just take it in. They don't challenge it. They don't test it. And you know, Paul, I think I mentioned this yesterday, Paul and 1 Thessalonians 5, he says, you know, test those things. Hold on to that which is good, but test everything. I mean, we cannot take this stuff at face value. I mean, inform yourself. Be informed. That's a part of what this program is about. Share it with your friends, by the way. Tell them to tune in to Washington Watch as well. And sign up, by the way, for my daily update. That's one way to keep informed on what's really happening on all of these issues, that either you get a slanted view from the news or you don't get any view at all. All right, phone lines lit up here. Let's go to Arkansas, where Brett is on the line. Brett, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, thank you very much. Yeah, I kind of agree with the last caller. I mean, I'm definitely voting for Trump, and I am looking forward to this debate. If it occurs and if she shows up, I'm still holding my breath on that. But to debate against someone who doesn't tell the truth, Donald Trump may be the only one that could actually handle it because I don't think he's going to let it go. I think Hillary would probably beat a polished politician because they're so careful with what they want to say. But Trump is not very careful. He just says it like it is. And I think that's why so many people like him. So I'm looking forward to it.
I think you're right, Brett. I do think that's the and that's where I was talking about earlier, the difficulty, the fine line that Donald Trump has to walk, because I do think you're right. I think in the primary that his uncharacteristic or his unconventional approach, which is uncharacteristic of most politicians, that it was attractive to people because people don't want more of the same. You get more of the same, you have more of the same problems we have. But he's got that fine line now of being in the general and having to present a presidential appearance where people can look at him and her or whoever the leader is. They want to look at him and say, you know what, I think I can sleep good at night knowing that this guy is in charge or this gal is in charge. And so that's what people mean by presidential, that he knows what he's talking about. He has a good temperament. And it is a bit difficult to go up against a female as a male. Okay, now somebody would say, well, that's a chauvinistic remark. No, it's not, actually. You know, I've been there. I've had to, when I was a candidate, when I was in office debating females, you had to do it differently because you didn't want to come across as being, you know, not a gentleman. I know people would say, well, this is 2016. We don't care about that. Everybody's equal, all this. Okay. All right. Yeah, right. I'm telling you, when a man is overly aggressive against a female, it leaves a negative impression. Because we still have in our society, as hard as the left has tried to eradicate the distinction between the sexes, we still are a country that has a strong Christian ethic which says that men treat women as gentlemen should treat them. And quite frankly, I hope we continue to be that way. I know I've only one time I've ever had a woman who I held the door for. It's a stranger. I mean, when I see a woman coming, I hold the door. And I've taught my sons to do the same. I've only had one time when a woman complained because I held the door for her. Most of the time, they appreciate that. So I think there's still this expectation that men will treat women like women, even if it's Hillary Clinton. So anyway, that's my commentary for today. All right, let's try. Let's see if we can work in one more quick phone call because we're almost out of time. Let's go to Texas where Carol is calling in on Thankful Thursday. Hey, Carol, how you doing?
Hi, I'm doing well. Thank you for taking the call. I will be voting for Donald Trump. I had serious reservations early on, but I received an email from Dr. James Dobson, and he stated that Trump was surrounding himself with evangelical Christian leaders to guide him spiritually. And that he was very concerned about the religious persecution in the United States. And after I read that, I had a greater sense of peace. I know Robert Jeffress is one of the pastors, and you know, there's several others. I think maybe David Jeremiah. But that gave me a greater peace about the choice.
All right, Carol, thanks for calling. I got to leave it there. Out of time. Thanks so much for calling in. Look, I think religious liberty is going to be a major issue in this election. I think national security is going to be a major issue. In fact, I think those issues both, along with a number of others, are going to be talked about on Monday night at the debate. Folks, thanks so much for being with us. Let me leave you once again with the encouraging and challenging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234. 34.